So would you please turn in your Bibles to Acts chapter 25? And our text this morning is in verses 22 through 27. And we will note, as far as the context goes, Paul is still in custody in Caesarea, the capital city of Judea. Festus, the new procurator, desiring to please the Jewish leadership, had asked Paul if he was willing to stand trial yet again, but this time before him in Jerusalem. This forced Paul to appeal to Caesar, which in turn forced Festus into sending Paul to Rome. But in the meantime, King Agrippa comes to see Festus. So let's read our text. Acts 25, starting in verse 22. Then Agrippa said unto Festus, I would also hear the man myself. Tomorrow, said he, thou shalt hear him. And on the morrow, when Agrippa was come, and Bernice, with great pomp, and was entering into the place of hearing, with the chief captains and principal men of the city, at Festus's command, Paul was brought forth. And Festus said, King Agrippa, and all men which are here present with us, ye see this man, about whom all the multitude of the Jews have dealt with me, both at Jerusalem and also here, crying that he ought not to live any longer. But when I found that he had committed nothing worthy of death, and that he himself had appealed to Augustus, I have determined to send him, of whom I have no certain thing to write unto my Lord. Wherefore, I have brought him forth before you, and especially before thee, O King Agrippa, that after examination had, I might have somewhat to write. For it seemeth to me unreasonable to send a prisoner, and not withal to signify the crimes laid against him. So as is our custom, we will open up the text this morning. And I'll make just one observation at the end. So in verse 22, then Agrippa said unto Festus, but the original says, and Agrippa said to Festus. It turns out that the "and" follows an explanation given to Agrippa concerning Paul's situation, including the fact that Paul had appealed to Caesar and that he was still in Caesarea while Festus was making preparations to send him to Rome. In verse 14, we would have read, and when Agrippa and Bernice had been in Caesarea many days, Festus declared Paul's cause unto the king, saying, there is a certain man left in bonds by Felix. So we note that Festus apparently had waited for the appropriate moment to mention Paul. I suppose that after they had discussed the many regional issues, I can imagine it went something like this. Oh, by the way, Your Majesty, perhaps I might receive your advice on a certain matter. And then he proceeds to tell him about Paul and the Jews. The matter was this. All trials for Paul in Palestine were concluded. There was nothing for anyone to do except Festus, who would be making arrangements for Paul to go to Rome. So Paul basically was on a holding pattern, just waiting to go to Rome. Festus had explained that the arguments against Paul involved esoteric issues revolving around Jewish and Christian superstitions. These issues were foreign to Festus. Now, as usual, Luke picks the precise word to convey the inner logic of the conversation between Agrippa and Festus. Paul will not stand trial in Judea again, as we have mentioned. So he would normally then not have an audience with any official of the government. Right? It wasn't in the book. It wasn't planned. His public speaking labors are done, or so it seems. Since the situation is such that there was no plan for Paul to speak, Agrippa uses language that implies that the opportunity to hear Paul is out of the ordinary. The wording acknowledges that Paul is not scheduled to speak in public. And I'm referring to the clause, I would also hear the man myself. The Greek allows Agrippa to say, I would wish to hear him, but I do not. And he doesn't say that. He could also have said, well, I wish to hear him, using the present tense as if he wants Festus to make the arrangements right away. But his thinking is, if I may be so bold as to go into the head of a king, I wouldn't mind hearing the man. So he expresses this as a desire in the imperfect tense. So he has not the usual tense. So we might say with the help of inflection that he would be saying, well, I guess I would like to hear from the man. If it happens that he is speaking, I would be interested in hearing him. So he's not not inferring or not expecting that he would have the opportunity. But if he did, he would certainly be interested. That's what the thought is. The one other nuance regarding the imperfect tense is that it can refer to the past. So I would use the imperfect tense if I was saying to you, I was feeling sick yesterday. The reference here, though, to the past time could be to the immediate past time in that he was thinking, well, while you were talking to me, it occurred to me that I would like to hear from the man. And as I said, although Agrippa is not pushy about this request, he is very interested. Because his whole thought is, I should also like to hear from the man myself. That's what he says. Now, one other interesting aspect to Luke's choice of words is he uses the word bulomai instead of the more usual synonym ethelo. Now, they both mean the same thing. I wish or I would. Now, since this is a Bible study, I'll make one technical note. Homer uses ethelo for mere men, but bulomai for the gods, because then a wish is the same as a will. Just a little bit of Homeric theology thrown in there. Now, despite the nuanced statement from Agrippa, or maybe because of it, Festus is excited and relieved to hear of the king's keen interest in Paul. He responds and says simply, tomorrow you shall hear him. Verse 23. And on the morrow, when Agrippa was come, and Bernice, with great pomp, and was entered into the palace of hearing, with the chief captains and principal men of the city, at Festus's command, Paul was brought forth. On the morrow, then, Agrippa and Bernice, having come with great pomp and circumstance, and having entered into the hall of audience, with both the chief captains, that is, the chiliarchs, the leaders of 1,000. So these are like lieutenant colonels or colonels in the army. And the preeminent men of the city, at the command of Festus, Paul was brought out. So as befitting a worldly king, he comes with great pomp and circumstance. It is a big deal. He comes in with his entourage. But we know that in reality, all this pomp is completely superficial and hollow for the incestuous power couple. But they do enter the auditorium with their entourage, the military leaders of the city, and according to Josephus, there were 5 cohorts there. So as the capital, they had probably as many or more soldiers as Jerusalem had. But anyway, they come in with the leaders and the most prominent men of the city. One wonders if Agrippa even remembered that his father died a horrendous death, being stricken at or near the very place in which he was going. I would have to think that it was in the back of his mind. Now, it has been written that the palace itself was magnificent, being built with white stone. It had both a theater and an amphitheater, and according to Luke, an auditorium. It had a state-of-the-art sewage system and covered aqueducts, quite well designed according to some. At Caesarea, moreover, the harbor was famous because it allowed ships to moor in waters that would normally sink an anchored ship. So the coast of Palestine there was not very friendly toward ships. But Herod the Great had built a nice harbor there. Now, some commentators believe that the king was being overly ostentatious, given that he was coming to hear a prisoner in chains. So Festus commands Paul to be brought out. The apostle is exactly the opposite of Agrippa. He's dressed in plain clothes and he's chained to a soldier. He is summoned. He enters alone, except for his guard. But he possesses the gospel of salvation and the gospel of eternal life. And all of this is inside the body of a poor, beat up, unremarkable looking man. He stands before both the procurator and the king of Judea. Imagine the contrast. This is the way God works. The servant of the King of Kings standing before the royalty of Rome. Verse 24. And Festus said, King Agrippa, and then literally he says, all the present with us men, take a look at this one. View him with interest. Consider him. He is the one about whom all the assembly of the Jews accosted me, both in Jerusalem and here, crying that ought not he to live no longer. As Pastor would say, bad English, but good Greek. As far as the participle crying goes, that they were crying that he ought to live no longer, the word is similar to our news, where they say that there was a public outcry about something or other. It's the same idea. The word multitude, about whom all the multitude of the Jews have dealt with me, that word multitude has the definite article. So it is translated assembly of the Jews, the assembly, that is to say, the Sanhedrin. It was the Jewish leadership that was unanimously and singularly against the Christian gospel. It was not the Jewish nation as a whole. And this is clear from the large number of Jews that believed the gospel of Jesus Christ. the Jewish leadership had absolutely no doubts that Paul was worthy of death and that he should be executed. Verse 25. But when I found that he had committed nothing worthy of death, and that he himself hath appealed to Augustus, I have determined to send him. Festus uses the emphatic personal pronoun here. He's emphasizing that when I understood, or when I grasped the fact that he had done nothing worthy of death, this one, himself having appealed to Caesar, I determined to send him. Now, we know that from the previous verses 1 through 24, that the reality was that Festus was kind of forced to send Paul to Caesar. It was Paul's right to ask for a hearing at the higher court. And we had talked about Festus being in a bind because, you know, now he had to explain himself. And as some commentators say, you know, he used indirect language to try to deflect the fact that he was in a bind. It was a self-inflicted bind. He had shot himself in the foot. But he says here, no, I was in control. I determined that I would send him there. But that wasn't the case. Verse 26. Here's where he's getting this effect. He's in a bind. Of whom, referring to Paul, I have no certain thing to write unto my Lord. Wherefore, I have brought him forth before you, and especially you, O King Agrippa, that after an examination had, I might have something to write. So I mentioned this last week, but Luke reports it plainly here. A certain thing to write to my Lord, I don't have. That's what Festus is saying. When he talks about writing to his Lord, he's referring to Nero. And he says, I brought him forth, that is, I brought him, Paul forth before you all. The you there is plural. When he says, I brought him forth before you, that's plural. He brought him before everyone. And especially before you, King Agrippa. So that the investigation, once it has taken place, I might have something to write. So Festus is asking Agrippa to examine Paul so that he might enlighten Festus regarding the charges so he could explain them to Nero. Remember, we talked about this. Nero would want to know why Festus had not taken care of the problem of Paul himself and why he had passed the problem to him. Right, that's reasonable. Festus, on his part, is trying to dodge a bullet by getting Agrippa to help him out without exposing his big mistake of trying to do a favor for the Jewish leadership. But we know that all of this is in the providence of God because he wants Paul to testify before Nero. He was foreordained to bear the Lord's name before kings. And I suppose that includes Caesar's as well. And then, verse 27. For it seems to me unreasonable to send a prisoner, and not withal to signify the crimes laid against him. So literally, Luke wrote to give some emphasis to Festus's thinking. For unreasonable to me, it seems, sending a prisoner, not also the against him accusations to signify. So it seemed to Festus that it was unreasonable to be sending a prisoner without indicating what charges he was facing. Festus knew he had to specify the charges that were leveled against Paul. Just like Felix received a letter from Claudius Lysias when Paul was sent to him, so Festus must do the same for Nero. See, but he didn't understand. See, Agrippa was an expert in all things Jewish. Festus was the opposite. He was clueless. So he really needs Agrippa to help him sort this out. Now, just a note about the word kurios as a title for Nero in verse 26. I want to quote Coney Barrenhausen. Quote, "The title Lord applied here to the emperor should be noticed." And that's what we're doing. Augustus and Tiberius declined the title, which implied master and slave. But their successors sanctioned the use of it. Unquote. And Nero was one of those who sanctioned it. Now, after adducing many examples of references to Nero as Lord from official letters, from unofficial letters, from inscriptions, Dr. Deissman writes, quote, "It is sufficient for our purpose to have realized the state of affairs in the time of Nero and St. Paul. And then we cannot escape the conjecture that the Christians of the East who heard St. Paul preach in the style of Philippians 2, 9 and 11, and in the style of 1 Corinthians 8, 5 and 6, must have found in the solemn confession that Jesus is the Lord a silent protest against other lords and against the Lord as the people were beginning to call the Roman Caesar." Unquote. There is one Lord, as we know, and his servant, nay, his ambassador, stood humbly but confidently before the extravagantly arrayed king and the procurator and all the military leadership and all the preeminent citizens of the city in a gorgeous palace, ready to give an answer for the hope that he had in Jesus Christ, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. Now, I want to make one last observation about this whole incident. What's interesting is that Luke does not make a big deal about Paul in this situation. He writes, it's all about the extravagance of Agrippa and of Festus, you know, bringing all the military leaders and everybody there. It was a big deal for them. But why was it a big deal for them to have all this pomp and circumstance just to hear Paul? I think that Paul was well known to the Roman leadership. I think that the effects of the gospel in the spread of Christianity was well known and perceived and understood by the Roman leadership. I think that when Agrippa uses the imperfect tense that he should like to hear him, that probably that also included the fact that knowing Paul's reputation and knowing all the facts that he was been able to defend himself at least five times before Roman officials, that this was an extraordinary man. He was involved in some extraordinary movement, and Agrippa wanted to hear about it. But you see, Luke doesn't make a big deal about Paul's reputation. But I think we can infer it from the fact that to come to this meeting, to hear this man, Agrippa and Festus pulled out all stops and they had all this pomp and circumstance, this big to-do to hear this ambassador of Jesus Christ. And that's the genius of Luke's writing. He doesn't say everything explicitly, but it's so well constructed that one can read between the lines and see the great telling of the story of Paul before Festus and Agrippa. So anyway, that's all I have. Thank you for your attention.